Blog Talk Radio.
This November 3rd, one of the most hotly contested elections in U.S. history, an unprecedented White House race. Who will lead the nation?
Jobs and companies are coming back to our country like never before.
He will shut it down again. He will destroy this country.
It is time to stand up, take back our country.
The president has no plan.
Tune into NTD on November 3rd for live coverage and results.
Well, good evening, America. Good morning, good afternoon to the world. I'm your host, Victoria Gaither. Thank you for joining us on Blog Talk Radio at Home with Victoria, as well as International Connection Media. My co-host is sitting in studio there in Foxen Beach, New Zealand. Stu Frith is joining us. Stu, today is the day. It is the showdown between Trump and Biden, and we're going to find out who the next president of the United States of America will be. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Vicky. Well, it's lovely to be with you on this big day for America. I'm fine, but I'll tell you what, New Zealand's on the edge, I think, just about as much as what America is, and it's keen interest following this big election. So, yes, eyes are on the TV, they're on the news links and everything else, just to see what's going to happen this big day for America.
And, you know, I think the entire world is on edge. I mean, I saw a story on the news yesterday, and it talked about coverage for this presidential race around the world. In every single country, people seem to be glued to their televisions. And I also heard in the same story that there is a bet taking place because it's illegal to bet on the presidential race inside of America. So a lot of betting is taking place for money in Europe, and Americans are actually taking place in this. They just can't do it here in country. But apparently one of the bookies said that this is the largest bet that he has ever seen in his career, and this bet is up millions and millions of dollars. And they actually have Biden by a very slim margin to win over Trump. So, you know, even when you think about it on the international scale, the money that's being made out of this race.
Yeah, true. And I think the TABs will be working hard here in New Zealand too. Because yesterday we had, of course, the big Melbourne Cup in New Zealand and Australia. And congratulations also to, of course, to the Irish breeder who owned that horse that won the cup. That was fantastic. But, you know, the big money's out there with these guys that have got the big money in their pocket to run the bets, you know, and run the bets they will.
Certainly they will. But now if you look at the polls here, and these are, you know, the main polls that come out of the universities and also nonprofits and different for-profit organizations, most of them have Biden winning by, you know, you're talking 3-4, I've even seen 7% over Trump. Now, three of the key states that you're looking at tonight, if you're listening to us from New Zealand, would be Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Florida. Those are battlegrounds that both candidates have been spending quite a bit of time in because Trump won those the last time around, but Biden has been doing very well. So he actually has a chance to win those. So they're saying, listen, if he wins one or even two of those states, then it's looking like that it will go for Joe Biden. But you know what, Stu? I was talking to a woman in Maryland today who was at the polls to vote, and she's a Democrat. And she says, listen, Victoria, I can't listen to the polls because I remember I have deja vu. I have knots in my stomach of what happened the last time with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And all the polls said that Hillary Clinton was going to win, and she lost. So she said, you know, because I remember what happened the last time, I can't basically put my faith in the polls. I just have to wait and see the results to come back and find out who's going to win. And, you know, you couldn't blame her or blame a lot of Democrats because of what happened the last election.
Well, you know, Vicky, to me, looking at it from New Zealand, I think, quite honestly, if it had been just a normal year with no virus, Trump would have come through and done the deed, no trouble at all. But his handling of the virus has put him in doubt, and I think there's a lot of people out there who've actually got off their backsides and gone and voted early because they don't like the way he's actually handling this virus. And he's putting it down as just a hoax, just a bad case of the flu. And there's a lot of people out there who are dying and getting hurt by this virus, and they're going to rebel.
Yeah, I think you're right. In fact, if exactly what you said is what commentators in America on the news and online and also social media are saying, you know, prior to the coronavirus, you know, probably I think most of the world thought that Trump would be a sure-in. But as a result of this coronavirus and, like you said, the handling of it, people are saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, we actually want a leader who's going to believe that the coronavirus is deadly and that it affects, you know, not only my family but my fellow Americans. So I think you're right. I mean, you know, who could have predicted, you know, year or 2 years ago that the world was going to be dealing with the coronavirus? So I've heard some people say that sort of to speak, it's a gift to, you know, the Democrats. You know, you don't want to look at it that way because, you know, we've had millions of people in the world die from it. In fact, Stu, just a couple of days ago here in America, in one day, we topped 10,000 new cases from the coronavirus, and doctors and scientists are saying that far more people are probably going to die this winter as a result of the coronavirus. So the coronavirus in America, it certainly hasn't gone anywhere. We're still wearing our masks, but, you know, you've got one part of America who wants to pretend like it really isn't happening, that you don't have to wear a mask, that it's nothing more than just the flu. Get over it. Let's get back to living life. And, of course, you have the other side of the coin who says, hey, wait a minute, you know, we have to take this seriously. So I also feel like, in a sense, this vote for, whether it's Biden or Trump, it's a vote for how Americans want the coronavirus from here going out to be handled. So, and you know, I think a lot of people thought that when President Trump got the coronavirus that he was going to be different, sort of soften his stance to say, hey, you know what, I got the virus. Perhaps I was wrong. Let's wear our masks. Let's do this. But, of course, he did the total opposite, Stu.
Well, you know, here in New Zealand, a lot of people question whether Trump actually got the virus or whether it was just one of these hoax calls, like a lot of these stuff is. It's just, you know, BS at the best. And, yeah, a lot of people never believed that he did have the virus here in New Zealand. They just brushed it aside and said, oh, you're right.
Well, I think, you know, not only in New Zealand, if you read comments from around the world, I think a lot of people, you know, thought the same thing. Something else interesting, excuse me, to sort of tease out today of what happened, America went to the polls early. We had an early voting turnout that topped 100 million people. There were more people, Stu, that voted early in this election than they did on voting day last election. Now, that's interesting because you can look at that two ways. You can look at that as, you know, the Democrats really hustling and getting the message out that, listen, get out to vote. You know, your life depends on this. Or you can look at that and say, you know, Trump supporters are doubling down to say, hey, we're going to make sure that we get out there early to vote. So, of course, we don't know which one of those, you know, is true until the numbers start to come in, which will probably start to come in tonight, my time, after 11 o'clock. Some polls close a little bit earlier, so you may get some numbers in after 9 o'clock. But I thought that was remarkable that 11 million of my fellow American citizens actually got out and voted earlier, because you remember last time there were so many Americans who didn't vote and who stayed at home and who said, forget it, not important, not going to do it. But that seems to be changing today.
It was a huge number last time, wasn't it? It was unbelievable. And I think that number that's actually got out and done the early voting, there's only a few more thousand than what the number was last time that didn't get out and vote. So that gives you some idea just how big it was, you know. The time is 6 minutes past the hour of 10 on a Wednesday morning here in New Zealand. And, by Jove, I tell you what, we are super excited about what is happening because it's just, it all affects us in the world and right through. You know, it's just going to play out such a big hand. And everybody says, oh, yeah, that's America. Well, for sure it's America, but America means a lot to our other countries and like New Zealand. So we hold our breath and wait.
Yeah, and very much so. You know, you think about the Five Eyes. You think about America, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and the United Kingdom. I mean, you think about that relationship that was forged after World War II, when, you know, the English-speaking countries got together to support each other, you know, to talk about intelligence and a lot of other things that they do that we mere people would never know about. But, you know, you talk about these relationships that are very, you know, important. There are heaps and heaps of Kiwi Americans. There's so many New Zealanders, you know, who live here in America, whether they're working for private industry, whether they married an American, whether they were here working for the New Zealand government. But you're right in the sense that, you know, America, whether you like us or disagree with us or, you know, however you feel about us, you know, our influence, you know, certainly does stretch, you know, to all parts of the world. There's a Kiwi, I think it was in the New Zealand Herald, who wrote an article, and she talked about how right now, you know, Kiwis basically don't have much nice things to say about America. And she remembers when President Barack Obama was in office, and then Kiwis loved America. But, you know, her point was, you know, whether, you know, Barack Obama is in office or whether Trump is in office, you should separate that out and still, you know, support America because, you know, they're our friends and our allies, and now is not the sort of time to drop the ball and support them any way that you can. And I thought that was a lovely thing for her, you know, to say, because it's easy to kick somebody when they're down. I think it, you know, says a lot just to be there and stand by someone when they're going through something.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, you know, and the world depends on have that stage now that they're depending on China for so much imports, and the imports have really got to be hit in the gut and slowed down because that is what's breaking all the countries around the world. You know, it's just not good, not a good thing. That's the way I feel about it anyway. You know,
I think anybody who knows you knows how you feel about the trade when it comes to China in the world, Stu.
Well, you know, it makes things a lot cheaper, sure, you know, but cheapness buys rubbish, put it that way.
Right. If you're joining us, thank you so much for being here with us on this special Election Day coverage. I'm Victoria Gaither, a journalist who is based out of Washington, D.C., which is my home. America is my home, but I also have close ties to New Zealand. As I'm a permanent resident in New Zealand, I spent 5 years there in that beautiful country and also consider it my second home and adoptive country as well. Stu is joining us all the way from New Zealand. He's in Foxton Beach, and he's a New Zealand broadcaster. So if you're new to our show, we try to do this show, guys, weekly, but a lot of things get in the way that we can't. But you can always count on once or twice a month, you know, just to check back with us. And I'm always posting on social media where you can actually find our show days and what we're doing. So, Stu, it is 4:15 East Coast time in America right now. The polls, most polls will start to close at 7 o'clock. There are some that close at 7:30, so we will start to see some numbers that will come in, I would say, after 9, 10, especially 11 o'clock. Now, of course, one of the biggest things that Americans are talking about, what happens if Biden wins and Trump decides that he's not going to step down? If that happens, this will be the first time in American history that a president has said, no, I'm not leaving. So there are all these different types of, you know, scholars and lawyers and whatnot on television sort of talking about this and debating this. But I think, you know, At the end of the day, whether he would like to or not, they would probably, I don't know if they would physically remove him, but they would certainly shut him out and he wouldn't have any choice. So it's going to be interesting to see, certainly what happens. I do know that President Trump was on the campaign trail for two straight days solid going into these different cities and counties where he had a stronghold in 2016, slipped a little bit, so he was there to shore that up. And Biden was in Pennsylvania. That's his state where he was born. And then he's going to be back to his home state right now, where he currently resides in Delaware, to see the election results come in there. Trump is going to be at the White House, and I think he's going to have 200 guests there that are going to see the results. He wanted to have it at Trump Plaza, but because of the coronavirus and some rules and regulations, he couldn't have it there. So he's actually going to be having sort of a victory party at the White House, which is new. I've never heard of an actual victory party at the White House. But apparently the 200 people that will be there will be tested for the coronavirus, because, of course, Americans are saying, hey, wait a minute. You know, there was already an event at the White House where you had a super spreader event. Now you're going to have another super spreader event. So we'll certainly have to see what is going to happen.
Well, I hope those 200 people get tested on the way in, and actually they get tested on the way out too. And it'll prove to them just where the virus has come from.
Right. You know what? That's not a that's not a bad idea. I wanted to mention my experience today. So I have been out and about in the state of Maryland, which borders the District of Columbia, taking photos. And, you know, a lot of people aren't very happy with the press today. And it's one thing you're always telling me, be safe, you know, make sure you have your credentials, you know, show your credentials if you need to, but don't sort of put it out there, because you're always worried about me as a journalist being a target for, you know, sort of crazy people out there who aren't happy with journalists. But I had a fantastic experience today. I was at a polling station at a convention center. And as journalists as we do, Stu, people may not believe this, when we go to an event like that, I have to take a photo of every candidate. So if I'm going to take a photo of one person, I've got to take a photo of all the candidates who are there, who are running, you know, for whatever, and the national candidates. So did all of that and took some photos of the Biden people. And the Biden people table was right next to the Trump table. They were all talking like, you know, clearly these people probably know each other because they live in the same community. But I saw one Trump supporter, told him who I was, what I was doing, and if he would be interested if I would take his photo. He said, absolutely. And he sort of joked with me a little bit about, you know, positioning him and, you know, where to take the photo and snap the photo. But I did not have a bad experience with any of the candidates, any of their the poll workers, the supporters, no one whatsoever. It was a pleasant experience, because I know you were very worried about that for me today, being out and about working.
Yeah, really, you know, the experience that you had today, that's the way it should be. Because you remember 4 years ago, you got stuck in that crowd, you got pushed and shoved and everything else. And that was a scary moment when you were sitting here in New Zealand listening to you reporting, and then all of a sudden you were going off air. By Jove, I tell you what, that was a worrying moment.
Yeah, I actually remember that. And that was in front of Trump's Plaza on Pennsylvania Avenue. And things were so calm and they were very quiet. You had all of Trump's supporters that were lining up and dressed up to go inside for the victory party. Of course, at that point, we didn't know that he won, that it was going to be a victory party. And then all of a sudden, you had Hillary supporters, and then just, you know, just general people that just sort of came down to be to look at the event. And then all of a sudden, it seemed like all hell broke loose. And I was in the middle of it, you know, recording and getting video and doing interviews. And then the next thing I know, I just got knocked and tossed around. And I don't know if it was my phone or my camera or something went down. And I was just off the air. And it took a little while before I got back on, because I had to get back to the car. I had to charge it, and because I think something had gotten smashed. So I think it was that time in between where no one on Facebook knew what happened. You didn't know what happened. My family didn't know what happened. So that black hole of a space was quite worrying. So by the time I had gotten to you and started, you know, talking, put an update on Facebook, you know, everyone was so relieved. So that was a quite a touching moment for me, just to see, you know, how many people really, you know, cared for me, and that they were just devastated that they thought that I had gotten hurt. But listen, I'm not going to be down on Pennsylvania Avenue today, so I'm just sticking with the poles and taking those photos, so I won't be down there today. But Stu, speaking of that, you would have also heard in New Zealand all the businesses that have boarded up, because a lot of businesses in America are saying, hey, wait a minute, if Biden wins, it's going to be riding. If Trump wins, it's going to be riding. And they're just saying, listen, we're not going to take any chances. So if you're driving through downtown Washington, D.C., New York, Chicago, Miami, L.A., any major city, and also, you know, suburban areas as well in America, you're going to see all of these businesses boarded up. That's the first time that I know of that's happened. I know in the 60s there was a lot of businesses and things that were boarded up. But I think in terms of presidential elections, I think this is the first time that we're going through this. So even that's new for us.
So much history being made today, isn't there? Just so much. And it's history that we never thought we'd ever see.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. If you're just joining us, you're listening to At Home with Victoria and International Connection Media. It's Election Day in America. The entire world is watching, so wherever you are, I know you're glued to your television set. Even if you're not into politics, it's very hard not to watch what's been happening here in America. So we thank you for joining us today on air. If you are watching, I mentioned earlier some of the keys to watch out for that are what we call toss-up states that could go either way. That would be Georgia, Iowa, Ohio, Texas, and also Pennsylvania. So I would say keep your eye, guys, on those states. And Stu, I would imagine at different community centers, at homes, at the RSA, at any place that Kiwis can, they're going to be glued to the television with a drink in their hand, watching the results come in, like they did the last election.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, of course, the thing that is going to affect that this term of voting is the virus, and everybody's very much aware of that in New Zealand. There's been two fresh outbreaks in the South Island and Christchurch, and that's got the South Island worried, but before the South Island was clean, now all of a sudden the South Island's had two, so that's put them on the alert down there. And all of a sudden they reckon that from the North Island to the South Island, there's been lots of holidays already cancelled because of the virus down in the South Island. Mm. So it just shows you how quick things change, you know? And there was only two. So, yeah, it's a worrying time, it's a scary time, and it's an exciting time. So, yeah, which gate are you walking through?
Yeah, it is certainly all of those things. Well, we're not going to keep you guys much longer. We just wanted to come on and put in sort of our two cents, or, you know, what information that we have. But most of what's going to happen is going to start happening after 9, 10, 11 o'clock here in America. So I'm sure that all of you will watch it on television. Depending on where I am, perhaps Stu and I can come back and give you some analysis later on this evening and afternoon or evening for Stu. But we can't promise you that, but we'll certainly maybe give it a try. Stu, there has always been a question whenever I was home in New Zealand about our electoral process, and people would always ask me, what's the difference between a popular vote versus the electoral college? Now, basically, every country in the world bases their elections on a popular vote. So that's, you go to the polls, whoever gets the most votes is the popular candidate, and they win. So America, we have the popular vote and we have the electoral college. But the popular vote is not the vote that wins in this country. It's the electoral college that actually wins an election. So I found a wonderful audio clip, and it's about 6 minutes long. And it explains what the Electoral College and popular vote is. So I thought that I would end our show with that so people can actually hear it. This is a very simple conversation. The lady who does it, she breaks it down quite easily to understand, and I thought that it would be appropriate for us to end our show on that tonight.
Look forward to hearing it. Thank you, Vicki.
Thank you, and thank you, everybody. And, yeah, enjoy watching the election results come in. Good night.
If you watch the news during a presidential election, you'll hear a lot of this.
What do the national polls look like?
Hillary Clinton's nationally.
Nationally, Joe Biden is currently ahead.
But these national polls don't actually tell you who's going to win.
Throw the national polls out the window. They don't matter at all. What matters are those swing states.
Ah, yes, the swing states. Most democracies around the world elect their head of state with a popular vote, so whoever gets the most votes wins. But in America, we do it a little differently. The U.S. is the only country that picks its president using something called the Electoral College. It's made up of delegates from each U.S. state. When Americans vote for president, what they're actually voting for is who their state will vote for. This is why, every so often, someone wins the presidency without winning the popular vote. That's happened twice in just the past 20 years. The majority of Americans do not like the system, and haven't for a long time. Both political parties have made attempts to get rid of it. So why does the U.S. still use the Electoral College? And who actually benefits from it? The Electoral College is based on how people are represented in Congress, where each state has a number of representatives based on its population, and every state also gets two senators. So, for example, let's look at Texas, which has a huge population, and Vermont, which has a really small one. Texas has 36 representatives in Congress. Vermont only gets one. Representatives in both states each represent roughly the same number of people. In the Electoral College, a state gets the same number of delegates as their congressional representatives, plus two for each senator. So Texas has 38 electoral votes, Vermont has three. But this combination makes the number of people each delegate represents way different between states. In Texas, one electoral delegate represents three times the amount of people as one in Vermont. And that makes each individual person's vote in Vermont a lot more influential. The Electoral College creates discrepancies like this all over the country. A voter in Wyoming is worth 3.5 times as much as a voter in California. And the winner of the presidential election is the candidate who gets 270 or more of these Electoral College votes. These are the results of the 2016 election by state. You're probably more familiar with this version of it, a map of red states and blue states. But this chart tells a different story. You can see that no state is actually all red or all blue. But almost every state awards its electoral votes the same way. The candidate who gets the most votes in a state gets all its electoral votes. If they win the state by 1%, they win 100% of the electoral votes. In 2016, more than 4 million people voted for Donald Trump in California. In fact, more people voted for him there than in any other state except for two. But it didn't matter. Hillary Clinton got more votes there, so she got all 55 of its electoral votes. Clinton never even campaigned in California. Polling showed she'd easily win the state. Trump only visited Texas once. He knew he'd basically had that state's electoral votes locked. But they both visited Florida 35 or more times. That's because Florida is usually a swing state. Polls show that the vote there could swing to one party or another nearly every election. Trump only won it in 2016 by 100,000 votes, out of more than 9 million. Swing seats have changed over time thanks to shifting demographics and political views, and it's states like these where presidential candidates spend most of their time campaigning. It also means these states have way more influence over the election than these ones. A study found that voters in Michigan had 51 times the amount of influence on the 2016 election as someone from a state like Utah. Voters in states like California or Missouri mattered very little. Swing states are where the election actually takes place. They get the attention and the influence, and they only exist because of the Electoral College. It doesn't seem very fair, but the Electoral College has always shifted power away from some people and towards others. It was how it was designed. Back when there were just a few states, not 50, they had to get all the states to agree on the Constitution. One problem. The northern states, which were largely anti-slavery, wanted only free people to count in the population towards electoral votes, which they had more of. The pro-slavery southern states were worried that they would be constantly outvoted and wanted enslaved people to count in determining the population. As a compromise, they settled on something called the Three-Fifths Clause. It established that an enslaved person would only count as three-fifths of a person. In 1800, Pennsylvania, a northern state, and Virginia, a southern one, had about the same number of free people living there. But Virginia was also home to hundreds of thousands of enslaved people who had no freedom, let alone a vote, and ended up with more votes in the Electoral College than Pennsylvania. That year, those extra electoral votes gave the candidate from Virginia just enough to win. Even after the U.S. finally abolished slavery and eventually gave Black Americans the right to vote, white Southern leaders found ways to keep them from voting, like with discriminating laws like poll taxes and acts of violence. This meant they continued to have overrepresentation in the Electoral College on behalf of a large population that couldn't vote. The first time Congress attempted to replace the Electoral College with a simple popular vote was back in 1816, but senators from southern states blocked it, saying it would be deeply injurious to them. In 1969, Congress came even closer. Replacing the Electoral College had support in both parties, and even passed the House, but it was blocked again by southern senators. A senator from Alabama wrote, "The Electoral College is one of the South's few remaining political safeguards. Let's keep it." Why change a system that historically had, and still was, benefiting white southerners? Today, the states that the Electoral College benefits have changed, but it's still making some voters more powerful than others. If we look at the states with a lot of electoral votes for not a lot of people, and the states with a little electoral votes for a lot of people, these states are a lot wider and less diverse than the rest of America. And many of these states are Republican strongholds. These tend to vote Democratic. That's one reason the two most recent Republican presidents have won the Electoral College without winning the popular vote. And since it's currently Democrats that are primarily disadvantaged by the Electoral College, they're the ones leading the charge to replace it with a popular vote.
Get rid of the Electoral College and everybody.
But as politics have changed, the people most critical of the Electoral College have too. In the 1948 presidential election, New York ended up being the major swing state. A congressman from Texas said, "I have no objection to the Negro in Harlem voting, but I do resent the fact that his vote is worth 100 times as much as the vote of a white man in Texas." Swing states change. What doesn't is that the Electoral College gives certain people more power to pick the president. And its biggest defenders have always been those who benefit the most from it.
Thanks to Absolute, who sponsored this